Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com. /awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Welcome to Breaking Beauty, the podcast all about the breakthrough people, products, and moments in beauty. We're your hosts, Jill Dunn and Carlene Higgins.
Welcome back to Breaking Beauty Podcast, everyone. I'm your co-host, Carlene Higgins.
And I'm Jill Dunn, and we are two longtime beauty editors turned podcasters. If it's your first time tuning in, welcome. Every single Wednesday, we discuss the breakthrough people, products, and moments in beauty.
That's our tagline. If you're a longtime listener, welcome back. And we just want to say a huge thank you for sticking with us throughout this entire year. 2020 was wild, and we know that it was a time filled with a lot of unknowns and maybe a little bit of anxiety for so many of us. So we just want to take a moment to say that we really appreciate each and every one of you.
Amen to that. I think doing this show for us personally has really kept us motivated and going, and it's been really wonderful to work on something creative and connect with all of you. And huge shout out to our partners at Dear Media as well, who keep us on the air every week. And, you know, there's been so much support shown from our audience, Carlene, like they're downloading episodes and sharing on Instagram stories and, you know, even giving us props on Apple Podcasts with a 5-star rating or writing a review. And of course, supporting our show by supporting our show partners. You know, to have the show on the air, we definitely need to have those show partners. So we're grateful for it all.
Yeah, keep using those promo codes. And since 2020 was such a roller coaster ride, we had to recap all of the highs, lows, and everything in between in the world of beauty. I really love that we have a chance to do this every year because we don't often cover these newsy bits so much in our episodes. So we're excited to be able to do so in this week's episode. And today we're hosting a virtual roundtable with some very special guests that we are honored to have join us.
Absolutely. And that's been a really bright spot in 2020, Carlene, is that we're doing these interviews remotely. We've adapted and now we can actually connect with people who are living all over the world. And that's been really amazing. I don't think we ever really foresaw that in the past.
New friends. Love
it. Exactly. So first up, we have Michelle Lee, the editor-in-chief of Allure magazine. Michelle really spearheaded a new, more inclusive direction with the magazine when she took the reins in 2015. She's been named Adweek's 2017 Editor of the Year. And most recently, Michelle became the co-host of Allure's new Science of Beauty podcast. Plus, Michelle is total hashtag Manny Goals on her Instagram feed.
We're also welcoming highly accomplished beauty journalist and diversity advocate, Dr. Ate Jewell, who will be dialing in from the UK. She's been writing for publications like Elle, Glamour, and Vogue UK for 19 years, and she also runs a digital production company with her husband. Her films have won international awards, one of which has been shortlisted for an Oscar. And her blog, jeweltonesbeauty.com, features award-winning beauty stories specializing in dark skin tones. She's currently developing her own range of foundation and color cosmetics, too. Whew, this woman is doing it all.
doing the most. We're so chuffed, to borrow a British term, to have these women on the show today because we admire both of their work so, so much.
Yeah, so let's crack on to today's discussion. Today, we'll be talking about the biggest moments in beauty this year, from the impact that COVID and Black Lives Matter has had on the industry and ourselves, to the viral social media moment that we're still thinking about and talking about, and finally, our crystal ball predictions for 2021.
Yeah, and we'd love to continue this conversation with our audience. So if you guys have any comments about this or moments that we might have missed, hit us up in our chat room on Facebook. Just search Breaking Beauty Podcast chat room and join the conversation there. And of course, everything that we talk about today, we are recapping that over on our blog at breakingbeautypodcast.com like we do every single week. So if you want to learn more about either of our guests or anything they talked about, you can click on over there.
So welcome, Michelle and Ate.
Hey there, my fellow beauty nerds. Before we dive into today's chat, I want to pause for a moment to let you know a bit about the new Allure Science of Beauty podcast, hosted by one of our guests today, Allure's editor-in-chief, Michelle Lee, and their executive beauty director, Jenny Bai. Each week, they dissect the science behind a singular topic, so it could be wrinkles or shampoo, and they get the answers straight from dermatologists and beauty chemists. I really think of these episodes like an in-depth feature that you'd read in a magazine. They're doing their homework and then some. If you want to check out an episode, personally, I really enjoyed the one all about the physical symptoms of stress that can take a toll on your hair and your skin and what you can do about it. They had a breathing coach on and I was like walking around doing the exercises, totally zenned out. Another fave was their inaugural episode all about sunscreen and education on everything to do with SPF. Subscribe and listen to Allure, the Science of Beauty podcast, every single Thursday where you get your podcast fix. We'll link to it in our show notes and on our blog. Now on to the show. So welcome, Michelle and Ate. Welcome to Breaking Beauty's annual year-end roundtable discussion. And this is happening virtually, of course, because it's 2020. We were just having a lot of fun, you guys, with our, there's new Zoom makeup filters we were all just trying on. So FYI, that's behind the scenes. And today we're going to be discussing the high moments in beauty this year, kind of everything in between. So welcome once more. And I think many, for me personally, a lot of viral memes and moments got me through 2020. Like if I could have a laugh at something on the internet, I was like so grateful. So I wanted to kick off our chat with one of those. And back in January, a Twitter handle at Gossip Babies tweeted a scenario, and I want to get your take. So the tweet was, your fiance gets kidnapped in a foreign country. You stay out until 2 a.m. with authorities, but eventually you have to call it a night and return to your hotel. Do you still do your skincare routine? Yes or no? Let's discuss.
Wait, what time
are you team,
is it?
Yes or no?
That's so easy. Yes.
Yes. Did anyone say no?
I think it kicked off a huge discussion online, and almost everybody said they still would do it.
Yeah, I would.
Well, at the very least, I'd have to wash my face.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you are on the edge, but because you're on the edge, you need your skincare routine. You need that ritual. You need that decompression time, and you need to, you know, take the day off, literally, and the stress off. So I would definitely, I would still be doing my program. Yes.
Oh yeah. I agree. I feel like this was the year where skincare truly became self-care, you know, that winding down ritual, right? With everything that was going on. And I think, you know, truly to kick off our conversation, COVID was obviously the biggest moment that happened to all of us in the UK, New York, around the world. That was back in March. A lot of the lockdowns happened. So maybe we'll start with you, Michelle. How would you say the world of beauty has been transformed in the last 9 months?
Oh my God. This could almost be a whole episode in itself. I know.
Yeah.
So much has happened. Just even thinking about mask wearing and how that's changed makeup and people saying, are we going to wear lipstick again? To be honest, like in the same way that skincare has become self-care, I also myself realized how much I actually love putting on makeup and wearing makeup. Mm-hmm. I think I kind of came around to it. I spent a couple of weeks where I was like, okay, I'm just going to do skincare and no makeup. But that was a huge change. But also just in terms of the business of beauty, salons closing down or having to limit how many people would come in. Just the types of products too. I feel like especially in the first couple of months, seeing all the different beauty brands pivoting to hand sanitizer and hand cream and thinking about just all of the rules that we've had and regulations and, you know, how to wash our hands properly. So much has changed. And thinking about, too, I mean, the beauty business was on such an upswing for such a long time because of retail. And now thinking about, we can't really swatch things anymore. We're not really in stores as much. What's been wonderful to see, though, in the past couple of months has been to see how many brands have changed how they're doing things and how they're selling things, how consumers are looking at stuff too. We've honestly found, like, from a content perspective, people are still so interested in beauty. It did shift a little bit, though, where people want to spend a little bit more on things that they know for sure work. They're talking a lot about beauty, but this year has been such a weird one.
Yeah. Now, have you been DIYing your nails? That's what I want to know.
I've got nothing.
You're the nail queen.
I've got nothing.
Oh,
but
no.
You know what it is? It's not. It's less about COVID and more I have a 9-month-old baby. So certain things, like, it's been really interesting to me to see what things I did for myself and what things I did for other people. And that's what I was saying about makeup, that I always thought that I only wore makeup for other people, that when I would go to the office, when I would go to meetings and stuff, that I was wearing makeup for other people. But when I was on maternity leave, and I finally did a full face of makeup again, I was like, God, I actually really love just the creativity and the process of doing it. And I think that's what's been good about lockdown in some ways has been we've realized what we can live with and what we can live without.
How about you, Ate, in London? Mm-hmm. What have you been seeing or just in the industry itself? What do you think is the most remarkable shift?
I mean, just like Michelle has said, it's been so eye-opening. It's been, you know, it's destructive, but from destruction comes illumination as well. And we've all learned what beauty really means to us and what our beauty professionals mean to us. And I've been so many Zoom meetings with people's roots hanging out, everything's all hanging out, and you just don't feel the same. And you know, you realize that your spa visits or your salon visits are like a confessional. These are people who are your friends and who are part of your support system. You know, it's like my priest, my accountant, my hairstylist, you know, it's like it's these other people in your life who mean a lot to you. I mean, I had the kind of opposite effect. I, throughout my career, always felt the need to really turn myself down. I was too much. I was too black. I was too loud. And so, you know, my daughters, I've got 9-year-old twin girls. And when my girls were little, they used to say, Mama, you know, you're just an old gray lady. Why are you always wearing gray? Because, you know, I just try and be chic, keep it really white, gray, black. And with lockdown, I just exploded and realized how much color means to me and what makeup. I have always loved color cosmetics, but it's just whipping out all the eye palettes and just playing and just rediscovering what that does for your soul in terms of color therapy. And I know a lot of my friends, a lot of my followers, they have helped heal themselves, self-care through color. Through, you know, we're just talking about whacking on a bright lip that just lights up your whole face, more than your face, your soul. And it's just, it's been really interesting to see what beauty means to people, what it means to me. And it is about self-care, exploration, expression, fun. And I've turned the volume up and I'm in head to toe pink. This would never have happened pre-lockdown.
You look gorgeous. Yeah. And I think kind of put a point on the end of that, I think what was interesting in March when everything just was like one day, everything was shut down. I think there was a lot of like fear for a lot of women. They were like, I can't get to these professionals. What is my hair color really even? Like, I haven't seen my own hair color in like 10 years or my nails or, you know, my lash extensions. But then I think once people got past that hump, it was this discovery mode that you're sort of talking about where they're like, oh, actually, this isn't so bad. Or if I want to do my lashes myself or get a lash, you know, lash extensions, then I can do that. You could adapt, you know?
I think it's really healthy.
Yeah. I saw so many people with interesting new hair colors. Like a lot of people went with the pinks and blues and it really was this time for experimentation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And lifting. And I noticed in the UK to help support all the estheticians and the salons and that you, Caroline Hirons and a handful of others launched Beauty Backed, the GoFundMe. And they ended up raising over £400,000.
I think it's up to 600,000 now. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm also on the British Beauty Council and we wrote a letter to Boris Johnson. You know, we were all very vocal. I wrote articles saying that the beauty industry shouldn't be shut down. You know, we were arguing you can get a pint of beer and have your beard trimmed, but you couldn't get your brows done. It was just ridiculous and such a show of misogyny. I think COVID-19 has really shown all the invisible fractures in our society, all the secret misogynies we all know we live with, and what's really, you know, it was a joke. All the MPs here were like, we can have cleaners, beard trims and beer, but we can't have beauty. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. All the stuff that you guys want, you know, sort of middle-aged men want. But it was very, very heartening to see how our whole industry came together to fight, to galvanize, to support each other, and to just recognize what our worth is in the industry, you know, for the economy. This is the British beauty industry makes more than the car business in the UK, but we're treated as sort of second-class citizens. It's ridiculous. So yeah, Caroline, my good mate, spearheaded this huge campaign. We all came together to try and make a difference because people are really suffering, you know, their livelihoods have been taken away overnight.
That's right.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. And it's tough to adapt as, you know, they say, we'll start selling products online. I mean, that's not going to make the rent, right?
No.
And or what you've trained for years. If you're an expert in what you, it's just really kind of insulting as well.
That advert that was in the UK paper, I forget what it is now, but it was basically like the ballet girl. And it was like, well, she's going to hang up her slippers to retrain as a coder or whatever. And it was literally the government was putting that message out there to encourage people in the creative arts and creative spaces. Retrain. Sorry. Like, what? It makes no sense.
So insulting. And also, how did we all get through this lockdown? Was it not through the arts? Was it not through music and Netflix and Zooms and tutorials? Isn't it the arts that got us through and kept us mentally well? It's silly.
Yeah, absolutely. True. And Ate, I just wanted to ask you, because I know that you're a budding beauty entrepreneur yourself. Did you have to change course with anything? And how has that impacted your launch schedule and all of that? That must have been tough.
I mean, it's been such a topsy-turvy time. It's actually upside down. So lockdown actually helped my beauty business because I spent 4 years knocking on doors and factories and chemists who told me Black consumers don't have money to buy at a luxury price point. This is what people have told me, that Black consumers don't want to glow. They only want to be matte because we have a computer and there's data somewhere to say that radiance isn't an issue. All this nonsense and noise I had been pushing and fighting through for 4 years, and then lockdown happened, Black Lives Matter, and then suddenly everyone kind of woke up to all the microaggressions and prejudices they had, which was stopping me from developing this line, and people were much more receptive. So ironically, it has been door opening because people get it and see what the prejudices they've had about, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So we're making lots of money having really ashy, muddy foundations that no one really likes, but, you know, so why bother? You're not worth it. You're not worth the R&D. And I found an amazing factory in Italy and we're really close to cracking it. So that has been really exciting, but it's been a very strange time. But ironically, it has helped the development of my brand.
That's great. Awesome. And what's the name of your brand again?
So Ate Jewel Beauty, and I'm coming out with a line of foundations, which will, you know, for darker skin tones, and a blush, which will look good on everybody, and the lip balm. You know, as Michelle was saying, it's all about a stain now. It's all about nourishment with a stain and a pop of color and in pink. Because when I was 15, a beauty consultant said to me, I went up to the counter, I said, excuse me, can I please have a pink blush? And she said, Black girls don't do pink.
No.
And it devastated me. It devastated me. It was just one of those moments where I was just told, not for you, you don't belong. She's, you know, she said it would look ridiculous on me. And so I'm calling it FU Fuchsia. One of Caroline's skin freaks named it FU Fuchsia, which was genius.
It is.
And so FU Fuchsia will be coming soon because that's how I feel.
Okay. That's amazing. Yeah, I feel that's like at so the beginning great. Of lockdown, everyone was questioning whether or not new products would really come out and new brands would launch. But I feel like at least anecdotally on my side of things, when I'm seeing stuff coming in, it seems like it hasn't slowed down.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. People want to feel good. People want to experiment and play. I think we've shifted in how we shop, like you were saying about swatching and not being in store. I think we're shopping in so many different ways. People are pressing that buy button even harder in lockdown.
You know what it is too? It's recommendations, I think. It's either reading what someone's written about it or reading reviews or listening to other people, like watching YouTube, influencers, other things. Like we're all sort of relying more on each other too to find out like, oh, what do you like? Yeah. You know, what are you liking right now?
Old school word of mouth. Baby.
And then, of course, Black Lives Matter was a hugely impactful event and it touched each and every one of us. You know, we really were forced to confront ourselves and who we are in the face of racism. And in beauty, in the beauty world, it impacted the beauty world as well. So I'm curious what moments when it comes to beauty stood out and what lasting impacts you think will carry into 2021 and beyond.
I think Pull Up for Change certainly was a big moment. Mm-hmm. I think what Sharon Truda did was vastly worlds ahead of other industries. I was really happy to see how many beauty brands hopped on board, but then also how many other brands too, because I think Reebok and Nike and others kind of ended up doing it. We also did it. It'll be interesting to see a year from now, you know, what the updates are as far as are people putting their money where their mouth is. Of course, I feel like a lot of what unfolded was sort of social media performance on some brands' parts. But I think that people are so savvy now that, I don't know, people just want more. And not even just in terms of representation. I think what Pull Up for Change did was it really pulled back, you know, are you just doing the black square on Instagram? What does it actually mean when we lift up the hood behind your company? Like, are you actually, do you have a diverse staff? I think that the next 5 years are going to be really interesting to see, though, like what different brands do that are not just for show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I mean, I had lots of brands calling me for consultancy. It was either brands sort of screaming in horror of how are we going to tackle this as a PR marketing problem versus brands were like, how can we do better? And it was very clear to see which side of the fence brands who spoke to me were on. Mm. I really hope this isn't a trend. It's not Black Lives Matter. It's just so hot this season. This is about real change and that my children don't have to go through the things I went through. You know, being a Black beauty journalist for the past 20 years, I've been told everything from because you're so well educated, do you feel like you're white? That was one of my first interview questions.
What?
And when I was in Vogue House in the UK, you've got a great education. Do you feel white? I mean, that was only like 20 years ago, 19 years ago. It's quite shocking. Mm-hmm. And the things that I've had to sort of bite my tongue on, and are you really pleased that there's 3 new shades for darker skin tones? And I would be like, are you happy that you have 3 colors to choose from? just having to reflect back and all the sort of nonsense I've had to put up with or fight back against. You know, I've been a diversity advocate all my career, just being in the room, having people have to tell me why they're not catering to me has been quite eye-opening and difficult. So I really want for the future for this to be lasting change, for people to have real accountability for, you know, I think real power comes when you have a diverse workforce, you have the people who are signing checks and signing off campaigns are a mix and are diverse, because it's a win-win. I think when you have a really diverse workforce, you have more ideas, you have more stories, you have more flavor in the cake. Yep. So everybody wins.
Yeah. And you also understand the nuance too of diversity.
Yeah.
I did a panel a couple of years ago and there were some beauty executives on the panel. And so one of them was showing a campaign that they shot and he was like very proud of how diverse this campaign was. But when people in the audience and myself were looking at it, we were like, oh, it's not really, because it was basically 5 models and there were 4 white models and 1 light-skinned Black girl. And so someone in the audience was like, well, actually. And so, yeah. You know, I was so happy that she said something, and it launched into this whole other discussion then of, you know, diversity isn't just like a check mark and you can't just be like, okay, great, we did it. Where there is so much nuance that you don't have a staff and you don't have decision makers who are diverse. Yeah. You might not understand those things. And so in our office also, we had this really long discussion a couple of years ago about colorism in the Asian American community. And so someone on my staff had said, you know what, I actually, until this conversation, really didn't know anything about it. And so it is important for all of us to kind of keep these conversations going and understand that it's not just a, hey, hire a diverse staff. Like, it really is, we have to keep doing the work.
Mm-hmm. I keep having the conversations, you know. Mm-hmm. That's a huge problem also in my community. I had a very close relative die of skin bleaching. You know, she literally died.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, you know, literally died of shame. Because, you know, people don't realize the bleach goes to your kidneys, you get kidney failure.
Oh,
and
awful.
It's because to be lighter is to be better, to be more wealthy, to be more aspirational. And people don't talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more we can talk about that and realize that that is an issue, and how the advert Michelle's talking about is just reinforcing these stereotypes, which goes to my family member feeling the need to bleach her skin in Nigeria. I think we just need to talk about it because it has to stop. Something has to change. And we have to unlearn all our unconscious bias because it's enough now. Mm-hmm. People are waking mm-hmm. up. I think COVID has done this. We've all sort of woken up.
Yeah, I think that reckoning is definitely happening, like Carlene said, with, you know, ourselves personally, and kind of like you're talking about with this campaign, Michelle, like over the years, you would see stuff come across your desk. All of us here are journalists, and you'd go, how did that get to that stage? And now it's going to impact their bottom line, you know, these mm-hmm. people that are doing it just for performative reasons. So diversity is good business sense as well. And I think that that's yeah. the piece that they never really quite got.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
people are Black yeah. women, a lot of, you know, the beauty industry is diverse. Everybody wants to feel beautiful. So it just makes all kinds of business sense too.
Mm-hmm. You're going to make lots of money. Mm-hmm. You're going to
yeah. make lots of money. Yeah. I feel like if brands are not doing a good job, the internet will get them.
Yeah. it's been so, yeah, social media has been amazing for mm-hmm. creating a voice and creating, because, you know, in the beauty industry in the UK, I was told all the time, listen, you know, Black consumers just don't have the money yeah. to pay for this. We don't have shelf space. So we have to, just so much nonsense. And, you know, Mintel mm-hmm. reports show that Black consumers spend 8 to 9 times more in hair and beauty than their white counterparts. But I always liken sort of racism and prejudice to sexism. It just doesn't make sense. You know, we've, as women, we've only had the vote in the UK for 100 years. When you say that out loud, it's crazy. You know, it's like, so for only for 100 years, women have been seen sensible enough to make political decisions and own property. That's just, it doesn't make sense. So it's mm-hmm. more than just common sense that we have to tackle. What are the real issues here?
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting. I was looking at Pull Up for Change's Instagram and they posted from an article that Fast Company did. There's a company called IQ and they used image recognition to analyze like 150,000 images from 70 beauty brands, their accounts, to see if with this facial recognition, to see if they're still maintaining the level of dark skin tones that they did 6 months ago when everything was sort of peaking with Black Lives Matter. And, you know, they have shown a decline overall. So it's sort of, you know, there was a lot of representation. Now it's started to go down, which is not the best news. But they said there were some exceptions. And I was interested to see who they were. Lancome, Urban Decay, Bobbi Brown, MAC, and Estee Lauder have continued the use of diverse models up until now, which I think if there's one silver lining there, it's that these are big companies that have a lot of impact.
MAC sometimes doesn't get enough credit for really being quite diverse for a long time. Mm-hmm.
The first, really.
Since day
yeah.
one.
Yeah, it's true.
I was 14 and I would go to the MAC counter in Harvey Nichols and kind of hang out there. It was a safe space for me. Come and play. I see you. And it's always been a really safe space. And I completely agree. They were one of the first, definitely. Yeah.
I feel like yeah. we need to teach the kids.
Yes.
Well, speaking of kids, we're going to talk next about TikTok. And I feel like TikTok really is it this year. Is there anybody that you guys have been kind of exposed to that you've really been liking? Are you spending any time on there?
Well, I knew about TikTok, I guess, before like the massive worldwide explosion because my 12-year-old was on it. And so she and her friends, like they would spend hours and hours and hours just doing the dances and stuff. So at some point, I started watching a little bit closer and I was like, wow, I remember when Charli D'Amelio first came onto TikTok. And then suddenly within like, I want to say it was some really short amount of time, either a day or a week or something, her audience just exploded and she became huge. And I think she just hit the 100 million follower mark recently.
Yeah.
It's wild. But to see how TikTok has become so mainstream has been amazing, and also how the beauty world has started to come in. Mm-hmm. So because we were watching Charli and her sister Dixie and then now Addison Rae and all of these other people, I mean, TikTok has been huge this year in the beauty world with Charli and Dixie doing their Morphe line, Addison Rae doing Item Beauty, Hyrum, who I feel like I caught onto Hyrum way too late because I'm not a kid, but it's been so cool to see that like these kids basically mm-hmm. are really yeah. changing the beauty game.
And I like that there's also been a lot of dermatologists who have started to get on TikTok as well, that, you know, there's a hashtag like TikTok docs, TikTok derms. So you do have professionals reaching young people with, you know, with expertise that's really fun. It's like a different level of edutainment, right? So yeah, I love that they've hopped on.
Yeah, it's very important. Because in the beginning of my career, you know, I was reading the height of magazines and it was that kind of Sex and the City world where you were just the head girl telling people what to do. And now it is completely different. People want a friend. They want to be like, try this. It's going to look amazing on you, rather than I know everything. I'm the mean girl. I'm Queen Bee. And this is how it is. And it's completely different. And I think that's a really good thing.
Yeah. Can I say, though, it's really time consuming creating TikTok. Maybe because, again, I'm not a kid and it's not natural for me to do it. But I've tried. Yeah. It's one, really hard to do. And two, you have to spend a lot of time doing it. So more power to the doctors and derms who are doing it, because it's not easy.
Yeah. That's so true. It's very time consuming. And it's interesting to see how the beauty world has tapped into TikTok in different ways. Like, was there any bigger song this year than Savage by Megan Thee Stallion? And like, then the next thing you know, she's starring in a Revlon campaign and she's doing her own makeup. And she's doing her own makeup for the WAP video. So I think like there's some interesting things how like it's going so much more mainstream. Like, you know, than like its predecessor, which was Musical.ly. Like, no one was on that, right? So I think it's just going to keep trending up.
Well, I started to see how big TikTok was getting when I saw TikToks trending on Twitter. Like, it started to cross over into other social media. So even for people who aren't on TikTok, they were still all seeing it. It's like the Ocean Spray guy who was skateboarding recently. I saw that first on Twitter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I think it was so cool this year that, you know, celebrities were doing their own makeup, I think, for covers and stuff too, right?
Yeah. So we actually had Selena Gomez on our October cover. And so Selena has lupus. So she really wanted to keep the set very small. And her longtime makeup artist, Hung Van Gogh, was on Zoom directing her, doing her makeup. And she did it all herself. But it's been cool because it kind of added an extra element to things. So not only out of necessity, but it was cool to be able to say Selena did her own makeup.
It's like you see your personality, the way someone does, and also the little tricks they do. It's so revealing. I thought it's fascinating watching people do their own makeup.
Yeah. And it's more relatable too, right? It's like, okay, if she can do it, maybe I can do it. When it's a professional makeup artist, it's pretty hard to duplicate, right? But what else on social media? Was there anything else in terms of a moment in beauty that we missed that either gave you a belly laugh or shook you this year?
I feel like definitely a lot of celebs doing their own things. Definitely saw some people using like a box of hair color at home too, which was fun.
How about the Eva Longoria did a whole L'Oreal ad for the box color and did it herself on camera for a 30-second TV spot? That was pretty groundbreaking, I thought.
Yeah.
That was incredible, I thought. And also 2020 was a time of realness. It was just people, the gloss kind of went off. And I really liked that, you know, in a funny way, that it was much more relatable, much more my beauty philosophy. It's about the inside out, you know, it's about how it makes you feel. And her doing that at home, it just made it feel a bit real. I like that.
Yeah. I know. Bravo, L'Oreal. They move quick.
I do wonder after all of this, like once the world opens up again, what we'll keep and what we'll go back to.
And now a short break from today's show partner, Purple. So we often talk about all of the things that might help us look and feel more beautiful on this podcast. Let's not forget the importance of beauty sleep. It's real, my friends. I firmly believe that a solid mattress and pillows are instrumental in getting your beauty sleep. And so I want to tell you about the pillow that's been helping me get more sleep these days. It's Purple's Purple Harmony pillow that has the same patented technology as all of their cult favorite mattresses. It's called the Purple Grid Hex. What's that, you're asking? I know. Well, if you could cut the pillow in half, you'd see what looks like a honeycomb inside. It's a grid of hexagon-shaped open air channels, and that's designed to neutralize body heat as it adapts to your body's natural shape, no matter which way you're lying or sleeping. Now, this has been super important to me because, little known fact about me, I notoriously cannot sleep if I'm too hot. I don't know how many of you are out there like me, but it's a big deal. I actually secretly believe that at least some insomniacs aren't aware of how much of a difference a degree or two in temperature can make. I'm not a doctor, but that's been true in my own life. And so my new pillow literally has a cooling effect. It's the best. So if you too are in the market for a new mattress or pillow, You can try every Purple product risk-free with free shipping and returns, so there's literally no risk. And because they're our friends, we've got a promo code for you. Experience the Purple grid and you'll sleep like never before. Go to purple.com/beauty10 and use promo code beauty10. For a limited time, you'll get 10% off any order of $200 or more. That's purple.com/beauty10, promo code beauty10 for 10% off any order of $200 or more. Terms apply. And we'll link to that offer on our blog and in our show notes. And now back to the show.
Friends, I'm Jackie Schimmel, philanthropist, motivational speaker, glowing wife, animal rights activist, and a shoulder to cry on. Not really. I'm a crazy bitch, but a hoot and a half. If you haven't listened to my podcast, The Bitch Bible, brace yourself, pour yourself a stiff drink, and get ready to laugh your ass off or cry. Make sure you subscribe yourself to The Bitch Bible podcast right now. You're going to effing love it.
And we wanted to touch a little bit more on the celebrities because there's been an explosion of celebrity beauty lines and influencers as well, like you mentioned, Michelle. So J.Lo Beauty is dropping January 1st, 2021. Mm-hmm. Alicia Keys with Keys Soul Care. There's Pharrell Williams. Lauren Conrad and Lisa Rinna tapped into their signature looks and they've launched lines. And Kristen Bell with a CBD skincare line, 11 by Venus Williams, Flawless by Gabrielle Union. Like the list goes on and on. So why do you think 2020 was the moment where this all sort of exploded? Because we've been doing this for a very long time. And of course, there was the era of the celebrity fragrance, the Gwen Stefani's, the Sarah Jessica Parker's, like Kimberly Simmons. That was a huge Shania Twain. I went to all of the launches. Which ones do you think will hit where others maybe didn't live up to the hype? Michelle, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think what everyone has to realize out there is that a lot of these have been in the works for a while. So I don't think that they were necessarily COVID related, but there has absolutely been an explosion. There was also some other ones too. Halsey, I think, has a beauty line coming out.
Wow.
And also just influencer-wise, I think Patrick Starr, Jackie Aina, Kimchi, the drag queen. It's been a lot. I think a lot of people saw one, you know, way, way back in the day, Jessica Alba, when she launched Honest Beauty. And once all those headlines became, she's going to be a billionaire. I think a lot of celebrities and a lot of companies and VCs and stuff went, boo, 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 boo. I see stars in my eyes, dollar signs, ka-ching. It was that. But then also, I think Fenty, honestly, had a big impact. Once people saw that Rihanna not only was making a lot of money, but that she was really making such a huge impact and making really good products too. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of celebrities thought, okay, I can do that as well. It has to shake out at some point though. I really don't think that all of them are going to survive. Some of them absolutely make sense. The Fentys of the world totally make sense. Some of the other newer ones, I'm questioning whether or not they're going to stay around for a while. I think part of it might have to do too with how involved people are. From what I understand, Rihanna is super involved in every aspect of Fenty, and that's very important. I think it's no longer the day where you can be a celebrity or an influencer and just slap your name on something and put it out. People can see right through that, and it's not cool.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, how are these received in the UK, Ate? Because I know I love the Brits because they're always like, eye roll. Like they see one coming out and they're like, oh, another one, here she comes.
We're quite deliciously cynical in the UK. Yeah, I think, like Michelle said, if it's not authentic, it's not going to work. People are over it. They can see straight through the nonsense. I think Fenty Beauty was just such a huge moment in the beauty world. It just shook everything. I got really emotional. I got teary in front of her in the launch. And I said, I'm so proud of you. And I got really like a Nigerian auntie. And she gave me a hug. It was really sweet. But she had a mission and a purpose. And you can see it. And that's why she has been rewarded by cajillions. And I think if you want to jump on that train, you need to be authentic. You need to have quality. People are, you know, people are suffering. They're canny with their money and they're not just going to give it away for stars in their eyes anymore just because there's a face on the box. It has to work and it has to be authentic and you have to be involved. So it's survival of the fittest. I can't wait to see what happens.
Yeah, I think purpose is such a good word for it, that there has to be a purpose and there has to be a difference too. It can't just be a makeup line that you throw your name on and there's nothing at all that's different about it. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate Pharrell's new skincare line because it's different. Mm-hmm. And I think he's someone who everyone always talks about him being ageless. So to me, it makes sense that he's launching something.
That's true.
Yeah, the fact he looks 15 is scary and I want to know why.
Yeah. And I think similarly, like J-Lo Beauty, I mean, she's 50. She's never looked better. Like these photos she just came out with like Merton Incredible. Marcus, the photographer, and she did the Super Bowl. And, you know, J-Lo yeah. Glow kicked off the whole celebrity fragrance yeah. boom, yeah. you know?
And I have to say, too, everyone who I know who's used Taraji P. Henson's hair care line yes. has been like in love with it. So
yes.
I think she's done a really good job of making it different and making it really good.
It's like the Orbe at Target. It's so nice. The yeah. packaging and everything. And the I've heard great things about that as well, the formula.
I actually really liked Selena Gomez's makeup line as well. And I love that there is a purpose behind it. Yep. And I felt like it was very, I don't know if it was like a signature look that came across for her, the mm-hmm. way that it would be with like a J-Lo, where you have an expectation. I'm assuming it's going to be something glowy.
Yeah.
But I just like the fact that it targeted maybe a younger person, but it was kind of like, hey, it's okay if you're not into the 24 color palette. Yep. Like you can just be you and still be part of this movement or be cool, which is what young people want to be, without necessarily being like a pro YouTuber, right?
Definitely.
I actually loved the makeup. I thought the quality of it was really great. The packaging is beautiful and I love the mental health aspect behind it.
Yeah, it all totally
as
made
well.
Sense.
It was interesting to see though, like the Selena stans, if any YouTuber dared to review it very honestly and say, I like this and I don't like this, their comments were just assaulted. It was like, it was, people were coming out of the woodwork. And I think that happened with Fenty too, to a degree. Like, you dare say something bad about this line, then you're going to hear from us, the army of fans. That so that's an interesting thing yeah. that you wouldn't have seen from a celebrity line 20 years ago.
No
one's that. Furiously writing letters.
I'm still waiting for Beyonce.
Oh, yeah. That I know. It's got to come, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ate, I wanted to ask you, Ate, if you have any scoop on the Alicia Keys, because I know you interviewed her for a cover feature and I don't know that much about that line. Have you tried it or what did you take away?
First of all, I'm a huge fan. She's amazing. And she's a beauty girl. Yeah. I'm always very suspicious when I talk to people. I'm like, yeah. She's one of us, you know, she's one of us. And it was a lot about skincare and well-being. She knows her ingredients. It's about skincare and well-being and inside out. So that's what she's coming up with. And yeah. she was just very cool. And I really liked her. We were talking about homeschooling and someone you can have a coffee with and have a chat with. I really liked her.
Yeah.
And she struggled with her skin. So again, it comes from a real place that she had acne, she had bad skin. She knows what she's doing. It has to be authentic. So if she is talking about skincare and she has been through that journey and she has got mm-hmm. beautiful skin now, I'm going to buy what she's selling because she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah.
For the world of celebrity, I feel like there have been some really interesting celebrity spokespeople this year too that have kind of illustrated how differently beauty brands are thinking about their spokespeople, because it used to be just like a sea of white women. And so now it's been Gemma Chan was just announced for L'Oreal Paris, Viola Davis, Megan Thee Stallion, you mentioned before, Lisa mm-hmm. from Blackpink. We had Hunter Schafer on our cover recently, who mm-hmm. just became the new person for Shiseido. I feel like that's been really positive.
Yeah,
I agree. It's necessary.
My daughter, she's, you know, mixed heritage. My husband's blonde, blue eyes. He looks like a Viking. You know, my daughter, they have very different looks. And one of my daughters has blue eyes and curly hair. She's the typical light-skinned model you always see in ads. And someone at school said to her, you're not very beautiful. You're not pretty. That girl over there is pretty, and pointed to her white school friend. And she said, Mom, am I not beautiful? And I just thought, here we go. Because of the lack of visibility, she let a little boy get in her head that she is not attractive or pretty. We had a whole conversation. Your beauty and self-esteem isn't wrapped up on what anyone says, especially a little boy. Let's talk about that later. But it was just so, to be able to see different versions of yourself is so important and really validating. And the fact in 2020, my 9-year-old is sort of questioning herself really hurt my feelings. And mm-hmm. it's good that we have a responsibility to do something about that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Confidence building in young girls, it's a toughie.
Yeah.
And then Fashion Week came and went in September. I worked on many a trend report in my day, but I have to say that this one kind of went over my head. It was virtual, I know. And I wonder, you know, how much relevance, I hate to say that, I'm not, you know, I don't want to downplay the fashion industry and its contribution, but I wonder how relevant it feels right now. And I don't know, did either of you pay attention to, was there a moment that we missed, whether as we said, it came to models or hair and makeup, anything?
No, not really.
Yeah.
I think COVID sped up a lot of things, right? I think Fashion Week, a lot of people for years now have been wondering, what is the future of Fashion Week? And believe me, there are still amazing things to come out of Fashion Week. I still love looking at the clothes. I love some of the shows, the makeup and the hair that comes out of, let's say, Couture Fashion Week. Like if Pat McGrath does something, it's like stunning and we will look at it for the entire year and be inspired by it. At the same time, though, because of social media and people wanting to buy things quickly and what is a trend anymore? You know, who starts trends? Yes, maybe some trends start on the runway, but a lot of trends start on social media. A lot of trends start just from someone doing it and their friends copying them. I think that Fashion Week is definitely ripe for change. I don't know what it's going to become, though. Once the world opens up again, is it that we completely move off of this schedule? Because what is a schedule and what are seasons anymore? Like none of it makes any sense since everything is global and it's a different season everywhere. But yeah, I didn't really pay attention this season.
I totally agree. It feels really old school now, doesn't it? I don't want to say that, but it feels really old guard and that same kind of like, we're the cheerleaders and that's what's going on. This is what's happening. And everyone's like, no, we're going to be over here doing our own thing. And I think it seems like I live for the creativity and the ideas and the inspiration and the dreaming. I think that's very necessary. But not in that format anymore, I don't think.
It's going to be, moving forward, it is going to be about the creativity and thinking outside of that box of what is a show. And Philip Lim, for example, shot his friends for his campaign. And like just doing cool things where you're like, okay, that's really different. And I'm going to pay attention to that now. Yeah. And similarly, too, like at the beginning of lockdown, the way that people were doing shoots, I always really loved that Vanity Fair shot Catherine O'Hara by drone. I thought, oh, that's so creative. And then it not only was just a fun shoot, but I paid attention even more because it was shot by drone. So even past COVID, it's like, what are people going to do to capture everyone's attention?
Didn't Gabrielle Union have one of her kids shoot her for a cover?
Yeah,
well?
There was definitely a lot of that. We also, when I was on maternity leave, the team had celebrities all shoot themselves. We had Jason Statham shoot Rosie. Yeah, it's really, it's been fun and they're good photos too. Like everyone's a good photographer these days.
Well, it's probably because they let their guard down, right? Which is what every photographer kind of aims to do. It's like, how do you get this instant rapport and, you know, show me what's inside of you as opposed to this nervous, frozen gesture. So, yeah.
Well, I also think just as a side note in terms of innovation with Fashion Week, like, I mean, I watched the Savage Fenty show on Amazon. Like, I think that that is maybe the future. And you're like, oh my God, they have celeb models. And it's just like, you know, for the first time, you know, we're seeing that for the, you know, the masses and everyone can watch it at the same time and get on social media and talk about it. And it just doesn't feel as exclusive anymore, which is, I think it was bound to happen. It's been fun to watch all of these creative thinkers.
Mm-hmm. It's exciting. I think anytime there is a crisis, there's war, or, you know, this is the closest thing we've ever gotten to war in our lifetime, COVID. Mm-hmm. This is where an explosion of technology and ideas come from when your back is against the wall. And I think this is the upside of something horrific happening. People are forced to be creative, and that is always exciting to see.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Did anybody show face masks on the runway? I have to go look that up now. But yeah, it seems like there were some. So that makes a lot of sense. We'll be like, that was spring 2021. That's a marker.
No doubt.
And so some other breaking news this year was something that I think is equally important and that I think will become a bigger part of the beauty conversation is human rights and the real costs sometimes of some of these ingredients in our beauty products. And I was curious if either of you have been keeping up with the Associated Press reporting. It took about a year for these reporters to be on the front lines and get the story. It was really about, if you guys aren't familiar, we'll link to it on our blog at breakingbeautypodcast.com. But it was very revealing reporting about the harvesting of palm oil in Malaysia and neighboring Indonesia. And it was really disturbing, frankly. It really outlined a lot of the various forms of exploitation, with the most serious abuses being child labor, outright slavery, and allegations of rape. The products that use this very oil are probably in all of our bathrooms right now. And frankly, palm oil is in a lot of products in our kitchen probably too. And it's a very insidious ingredient because it can be listed as up to like 200 different things on a label. And so I was wondering if you have any commentary on this reporting and what it might mean, you think, for supply chain transparency and what the responsibility is when you read a story like that. I was just gutted. I couldn't stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I'm curious what your take might be.
Yeah, I mean, it was a devastating story and such an amazing piece of journalism, honestly. I think it's one of those things that after I read it, I did think, oh my gosh, what can we do? And I know that there are some of like the really big companies that are trying to dig into their supply chain more. But I understand it is difficult because a lot of times, like, you know, you're not just getting something straight from the field of like, you know, for palm oil. It goes through so many different hands. So for these large conglomerates to really understand where their things are coming from, there is a lot of digging that they have to do. I do think some of it starts with those very large companies that make a huge change in that supply chain and make these women's lives better. That will change so much. But honestly, for years, there have been other stories about palm oil and the environment too. Mm-hmm. So I think that on top of the human rights exploitation, I think that finally it's gotten enough attention that people are really going to start to look at it.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's terrible, but money talks. And if as consumers, we say, no, we're not having it. You need to do better. You need more transparency. Then things will change. Also, Mica for eyeshadow, it says horrible stories of child labor as well and child slavery. It's about just doing better and not closing your eyes to it. I think people just go, la, 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 it's cheap. I want it. And I think it's not acceptable anymore. As I said, this is the year of illumination. It's time to wake up and we all need to take responsibility and demand more. And we've got all this power with social media, with Twitter, with our voices. And as soon as companies and people know that we won't buy it unless it's clean, unless it's accountable, then that's how things change. In this day and age, people should not be exploited like this. It's horrific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's really interesting. Like you talked about cruelty-free. It's like that needs to mean also in the supply chain of human beings.
Yeah, exactly.
And people don't think about it that way.
Yeah. I was just going to say the same thing that I think that's cruelty-free is such a good blueprint for all of that, that there was such consumer demand that now the brands really pay attention to that. And anything new that's launching, it's just accepted that you're going to be cruelty-free.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth noting that some of these big companies are aware of these issues and taking significant steps in trying to address these issues by putting stops in place, like grievance reporting and suspending certain farmers and calling them out, because pulling out completely would also be devastating. So it's really complex. And for reference, we're going to link to some of those responses and policies on our blog as well.
And after I read that article, I just kept thinking about Anita Roddick with the Body
Yes.
Shop. What a trailblazer she truly was, you know, in terms of transparency. And I once
Fair
went
trade.
On a press trip with the brand to Samoa to see how they harvested their coconut and went to the farms. And, you know, you could see, and I just feel like that was a brand at a time when you could trust it, that if you were buying, you know, this particular product, that there wasn't some form of exploitation involved in it. And you just, to me, you wonder, like at one point they were owned by L'Oreal, and it's like when they acquire these smaller brands that have these good practices, like it seems like they take on, like they share some technologies, but it's like, why wouldn't you borrow from that? Why wouldn't you
adopt that ethos?
Adopt those practices. Do you know what I mean?
Money. It's cheaper to be disgusting. It really is.
Yeah.
It's cheaper.
I mean, the body shop's pretty cheap though. I don't know.
I remember when people used to laugh at organic food. I remember when people used to laugh at gluten-free and lactose-free. And it was like, oh, you poor thing. And now it's just, you know, people having moon milk and stuff. It's so different how the wave of how we go. But, you know, Anita in the Body Shop, she was a maverick. She was just someone. Yeah. And I was telling the girls, my girls are 9. And, you know, we were talking about, just like Michelle saying, cruelty-free. They're like, what do you mean? What happened before? I said, oh, well, they were, right. It was so, yeah, because they're 9. I said, well, people would put things in bunnies' eyes. And she went, what? Like, are you kidding me? They didn't even believe that people tested. They didn't even understand the concept of testing on animals. They put stuff in bunnies' eyes to test makeup. So I think in the same way, we need to make it that this is just not acceptable. And I think you do it through money. Money really is a driver. Economics is everything. If people are going to lose money because they're not going to buy these products, then things will change.
Yeah. We're definitely in this new era of the conscious consumer, where whether it's human rights or the environment, like a lot of what I've been talking about recently in my office has been just all of the packaging and all of the waste in the beauty industry too. And so especially because we're all home and we're all opening our own boxes and stuff, just the amount of stuff that piles up and like the mailers that we get as beauty editors too from various companies who shall remain unnamed, who it's just so much plastic and it's all just like they'll leave a little note sometimes in it that says, if you want to recycle this, send this back to us. But it's like, really, I'm going to send you back your packaging so you can recycle it.
Yeah, that's a different form of waste.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Makes you feel better maybe, but it's still, you know, they're still affecting the climate for sure.
Unnecessary.
So we're going to get into some 2021 predictions. I know we have to let you go sadly soon, but before we do, is there anything on the tip of your tongue, burning beauty moment in 2020 that we missed that we can't not talk about?
I just think it is people realizing that there are no rules, just to love themselves. Self-care and self-esteem and skincare and beauty are all wrapped in together, and that people will be wanting more of that, I think. More of the soulful beauty, which I think they have found deeply comforting during this crazy time. And that's the beauty I'm into, inside out. Yeah.
For me, one moment in 2020 that I want to call out that I was just, my jaw was on the floor and I was so excited is when Pat McGrath and Naomi Campbell teamed up. And I attended the desk side of that. And it was such, I was like, oh, I wish I was recording this, because it was them going down memory lane of all their shoots with like Stephen Meisel and their first moments together in like a basement bathroom of some fancy hotel. And it was just so exciting to see. And like, I loved that whole era in the 90s, obviously. So that was a moment. Seeing the two of them that together.
Who can forget Naomi's hazmat suit on the plane?
She was on it
I mean, she just set the tone for the year, right?
Too fabulous. Oh.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's do we have any more predictions for 2021 when it comes to products or media or just beauty in general that you see on the horizon?
I think we're going to see a lot more intersection of technology and beauty too. I mean, that obviously has been happening the past couple of years, but definitely sped up by COVID. As we were playing with the AR filters on Zoom before, I think definitely in the world of retail, we're going to start to see more augmented reality. There will be other things that I can't even imagine happening yet, because COVID has sort of forced people to think about beauty and retail and just other things differently.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Target and Ulta collaboration was kind of shocking to a lot of people, that Ulta was able to convince, and that's going to be rolling out, I believe, in 2021, that Ulta was able to convince a lot of its more prestige brands that, no, you need to be here. And reason being, Target sells food. They're an essential service. They will always be open. Mm-hmm. Ulta, maybe not so much. So let's get in these doors. Let's build this mecca inside a beauty destination. It's good for everyone. And I don't think you would have ever seen that 20 years ago, where it was all about exclusives and clandestine thing meetings. Don't know what I'm launching. And now it's like, let's partner together and get more people through the doors.
Yeah. I've been really happy to see like how the quality of affordable beauty has gotten so much better in recent years.
Totally.
And like the stuff that they have at Target is great.
I'll be curious to see if there's more skincare infused cloth masks that happened for Maskne. Like, will there be a Dr. Jart by the Gap, you know, collaboration?
Interesting.
That's what I want to know. So our final question for both of you, this is the fun one. This is what everyone really wants to know. What was your number one favorite product that dropped in 2020 that everyone needs to know about and why?
One of my favorites. Fenty did such a good job on their sunscreen. I really like the UV visor or something. Mm-hmm. It's really good, though.
I'd have to say, because my rediscovery of how much I love color, Pat McGrath, sweet.
Oh,
can you?
That.
I mean, just delicious. So this palette, Mothership Celestial Divinity, just for pure joy and the love of life.
Thanks for listening. You can find details on every product mentioned in today's episode, along with our exclusive promo codes, on our blog at breakingbeautypodcast.com.
While you're there, be sure to sign up for our newsletter. Every episode will be delivered directly to your inbox, so you won't miss a single thing.
and get social with us. Let us know what you think of the episode. You can follow us on Instagram at Breaking Beauty Podcast.
And did you know we also have a private Facebook group? Just search Breaking Beauty Podcast chat room.
You can even leave us a voicemail at any time with questions or feedback at 1-844-227-0302.
And don't forget to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast fix. Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Apple Podcasts, where you can show us some love by writing a review.
See you next Wednesday.